It's sort of like society says you need to be stoic and not rely on others too much and solve your problems internally. Don't bother others. Don't rely on others. That's not good for a relationship, because then we start to operate in what we call a one-person system. You have to move into thinking in that two-person system. What's good for me is also good for you. We together and for a relationship, for it to thrive, we take care of each other.
Has your relationship moved from the honeymoon phase to the frustration phase, where literally everything bugs you? Curious about the secrets to maintaining a blissful relationship long term? And if shit hits the fan and our relationship hits stormy waters, can we come back from that? Hi everyone, I'm Nicole Sharanam. Today we chat with Melissa Ferrari, who is one of Australia's most sought after therapists. With over 25 years experience in couples counselling and individual psychotherapy, she is regularly called upon as a relationship expert across national media. So we're going to talk to Melissa about the dynamics of relationships, the importance of paying attention, repairing betrayals, and the need for unconditional love in a two-person system. So let's get right into it, team.
Hi, Melissa. How are you going?
Hi, how are you going?
Thank you for joining us here.
I'm really happy to be here.
Thank you. So I know that you are a bit of an expert when it comes to all things relationships.
Well, thank you for the compliment. I think after 25 years of working with couples, we could call me a bit of an expert.
And so I have so many questions. And of course, it's all for the listeners, Melissa. It's not for me.
Of course. Or for a friend.
That's right. So I would love to know, let's get straight in there. With relationships, we go through the honeymoon period and everything is blissful and the birds are chirping and the rose-coloured glasses are on, and then we get 4 years down the track or 2 years down the track or 6 months, depending on that relationship, and boom, we are hit by reality. And suddenly, why does he leave the toilet seat up, and why does that bother me so much, and why can't I hear the birds chirping anymore? What can you share about that, please?
Okay. Well, at first you're on a cocktail of drugs, pretty much. You know, you've got the bonding hormones like oxytocin, and you've got all those neurotransmitters and everything that can actually be like being on drugs. That's how you could compare it. It's that strong. We all know that feeling. And then what happens over time? And I think you're saying 6 months, you know, anywhere from the 6 to 12 month period. Up until, I would probably say, about 3 or 4 years. It depends on how it wears off on you. But over time, we do this process where we automate our partner. In the beginning, we want to be near them. We want to smell them. We want to touch them. We want to be by their side. We kind of merge into becoming this blissful one or in a bubble, let's say. And then you're right, reality hits. Because all of the hormones starts to fade away and you've not got those props to prop up the relationship. And then you've got to deal with reality and the rose-coloured glasses come off and we realise, oh, this is who we've got. And that can be things like leaving the toilet seat up, some of the niceties that used to happen in the beginning starting to fall away, not paying attention to each other and as much, not doing the eye gazing that is done so much in the beginning. We fall in love through the eyes and we stay in our partner's eyes and that's where we want to be all the time. And all of that starts to fade away. And during the brain actually automates your partner, which means I know you. I know who you are now. I don't need to pay so much attention. I don't have to put into so much effort because you've become more predictable. I don't need to sit with you for hours and gaze lovingly at you trying to work you out because I know you. And that's when people start to think we're not in love anymore. Or, gee, what happened? Is this really my purpose? Questions like, oh, are we compatible? And all of those kind of questions come up. And the thing is, you probably are compatible and you probably are still in love. And we don't choose by chance. If you've ended up with somebody, it's because there is attraction there, especially if you've lasted this long. And they probably still are your person. Mm. And so it's that automating process that makes it very difficult, because we go, it just goes into memory as, ah, I know who you are, and we stop paying attention. And the one thing that I'm always asked, what's that gold nugget around why relationships go wrong? In my opinion, because we stop paying attention.
So essentially, if we could, well, to flip it on its head then, sounds like you're saying that if we spent time refocusing perhaps and paying attention to our partner and a relationship, that we could bring all of that back alive. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what I'm saying. And that's why when people come to couple therapy, I put them straight into those kind of positions of paying attention.
So what does that look like? Tell us. Workshop us.
Oh, okay. Well, I will hear people's problems, and it will be along the same vein as what you've described, or maybe we're just fighting all the time now, all of that kind of stuff. And I will get couples to go face to face straight away. And I remind them that while they're looking at their partner, they're going to get a lot more value rather than reporting about their partner to me, because they have the bond. They've shared all of the oxytocin and that beautiful bonding experience that hasn't been with me, being between them. And so they can tell me as much as they like about their partner with their complaints and everything. But the work really comes back to reigniting that a little bit more and teaching them to start to pay attention. And when people are face to face and they may go into conflict, you do notice the little nuances of how you've upset your partner, rather than when doing it over email, by text, on the phone, the way that people tend to fight. And you can actually notice, oh, gee, that. Or maybe I better back and back off, because I can see that their jaw starting to get tense, their nostrils are starting to flare, they're starting. Right. And if you're not doing that face to face, we will continue saying what we're saying, hurting our partner, making missteps, making a lot of assumptions. Assumptions get couples into trouble. Whereas when you're face to face and you're being more curious and you are paying attention, you're giving your relationship a lot better chance than probably sending letters or texts that are as long as my arm. It's like, because that's what people do, right? And all that happens there is you pretty much lose your audience. Whereas when you're face to face, you have to pay attention.
Okay, so I know that a lot of the listeners have raised questions with around time constraints, but how do we fit this in? Because of course we would all love that time to be able to spend, you know, going and frolicking in the flowers on the fields with our partner. But the reality is we work, we have kids. How do you make that happen? What's the structure around that?
Well, I think what's important is that couples at least take 5 to 10 minutes a day to really pay attention, right? 10 minutes is not a long time. Right. And I think a lot of people, they'll pour it all into date night. When we get to date night, we start to pay attention, you know, and everybody kind of arrives all frazzled. The babysitter was late. We haven't been talking for 2 weeks. And now we're going to attempt to do date night. And we all know that feeling when you're watching a couple in the restaurant and you're thinking, oh boy, these two haven't talked for a couple of weeks. What is better is more daily rituals. Checking in, sitting opposite each other, being present for 10 minutes and actually asking how are you? Or better still, how am I with you? How are we going? which is the big question people will often want to avoid. But if you ask that question daily and you're checking in daily, there's no room for a whole lot of resentments or residue or things to be built up if you tend to do that every day. Now, this can look like however it wants to look for people. But what I'm really saying is daily check-ins, paying attention, rituals, whether it be your morning coffee together, but anything that really marks this as being our relationship, not children, not grandparents, not parents, not work, not the gym, not myself, because that gets in the way, myself.
I like the sound of that. It sounds good on paper. But then you add in the baggage that we all have, you know, and I like, it sounds beautiful. Let's sit down and have a cup of coffee and we can just talk. But then you add in the baggage of the fight that you had and the fight you had 5 years ago and the, you know, the stuff that's hanging around. How do you push past all of that?
Well, sometimes you need a couple therapists to push past all that. If you've got stuff that's hanging around from 5 years ago, I dare say you need a couple therapists, right? Because that's too long.
And there it is, folks.
that's too long, right? What I'm talking about here now is a couple that's decided together that they want to make the relationship secure, that safety, paying attention, security, collaboration is first. So part of this is a discussion. Do we want to be the couple that puts our relationship first? Right? And some people will say kids first, right? And understandably so. And what I'll say to people is, you know, you need to agree on something first. If it needs to be kids, great. But don't complain later that there's passion in the relationship.
Interesting. I am of the belief that it should be your relationship first because the kid needs to learn from you, right? I feel like that's the foundation. But then on paper, that's very hard to put into place when I only have one kid, but she's got the energy of about five. So, you know, yes, I am very lucky, but it is challenging to have, you know, all of that done. Being present does sound beautiful every day. And then I guess where my question would go from here is, you know, you said for those people that are suffering from the baggage that's past tense and getting a therapist, you know, how do you come back from that? Like, yes, okay, we can go and see a therapist, but as we've got a sneaky kind of opening to a therapist right now, I would love to know for all of our listeners that have something that's happened in a relationship, be it an argument or be it something that's just gone on for a long time, disagreements, or whether it's something massive like being disloyal or cheating or something like that. A betrayal, thank you. If there's something there, can you come back from it?
I don't want to generalize, but I'm going to try to, okay? Because there can be so many nuances to why a betrayal happens. You know, there's always a backstory usually to that, and it's usually about the relationship, okay? But if you want to repair with your partner, if you genuinely want to keep the relationship, the term that we use in the methodology, the model that I use, which is the PACT approach, the psychobiological approach to couple therapy, would be to show genuine remorse and that old-fashioned term of falling on your sword. That if you have somehow created an injustice for your partner and you could argue as much as you like, but it didn't happen that way, or I didn't mean it to happen that way, or it was accidental. They're not interested. Your partner's not interested in those excuses. They're more interested in how you want to fix it with them. So that can really do a lot to genuinely just say, I see I hurt. I may have my story about why it happened, but right now doesn't matter. All that matters to me is that you're upset, I've hurt you deeply, and that I'm really, really, really sorry. And I'm not leaving this room until I know that you've hurt.
Wow, that's powerful, isn't it?
Just stay with them.
Yeah, because I think when you say, you know, focus on your partner and be present with them, it's easy for us to kind of almost go, oh, yeah, okay, I can do that, and just brush over it. But what we don't realize is, I think when we're actually fully present, where it means also getting out of our own heads, doesn't it? And considering the partner.
That's right. And recognizing that you're a two-person system. If one of you aren't doing well, the other will follow, because that is human nature. That if you help your partner feel better, it is not only for them, it's for us. It's for the system. It's for the relationship. That we all know if we do well in our relationships, and that we're happy, and we are the kind of couple that people like to hang around because you're safe and secure with each other, that you're going to have more resources to go out into the world and do all the big things that we all like to do nowadays, right? You're going to be probably 35% healthier. That's what statistics say. And you're probably going to have better mental health. They are three really good reasons to make sure you're fixing things with your partner, that you're getting to repair as soon as possible, and not leaving it, because leaving it for too long is problematic. People who don't repair for 3 or 4 days, you do that too many times, you will run into problems. So a two-person system where you invite someone into your life, which is a big deal, you've got a responsibility to that, huh? If you're going to marry someone, there's a huge responsibility that you're going to take care of. You're going to be secure for them. And so this is really about a thinking that has to rise above the busyness of every day, that says we've got a deal here. And the deal is the relationship is first, but it's first for good reason.
So this podcast is a lot about connection, and I guess you've touched on the word connection without actually saying the word a lot. Being present and listening and all of those things really is connection. So can you talk a little bit more about that? Is there other ways that connection is important in relationships that can help us to be happier in general?
Well, it's really interesting, because romantic love and a partnership is very similar to the parent-child relationship. When you think about a child, what do they rejoice in from their parent? They rejoice in attention. They rejoice in hearing how great they are. They rejoice in seeing that smile on your face when you pick them up from school or daycare. They rejoice in you being the first thing they see in the morning. I have a mum or dad that looks at me first before they look at their phone. All of those things apply in romantic relationship as well. Now, we're not kids, we're adults, right?
Well, some of us are a bit kid-like.
That's right. That's part of the problem.
Not pointing any fingers, though.
If you can, we all know how to be with our children. We all know how much we want to pour into them, right? And if you use some of those principles of acknowledgement, you know, having a child where you can really say, I see you, I know who you are, I know how to navigate, I know the vulnerability, the potholes, I know what not to say or what not to do, or how you can feel rejected easily. They're all things that we will think about for our children. And those same.
Absolutely.
They are. Those same principles works with adults. And if we put the same energy in, we'd have wonderful relationships, really.
Gosh, you make it sound so easy. Like with kids, we are more inclined to put on the happy face. And not that we fake it, but we are more energetically and open and loving and caring. And we are all of those things for a kid very quickly. But with the partner, it's almost like we saved all the good stuff for the kid. And then we go to our partner, you know.
I'll tell you why it is. A parent-child relationship is unconditional, right? Whereas adult relationships does have conditions. So that's why it doesn't happen so naturally.
Tell me more. What does that mean? Elaborate.
Well, because we're adults, it has to be conditional because it's transactional, right? Whereas with children, it's unconditional because they are smaller. We're taking care of them. Their life is in our hands, right? But with adults, there's more conditions. So the conditions where you may have a partner who is not collaborating or responding to you in the same way you are with them, that's when you run into problems because someone's not sticking to the agreement. The agreement being, my job is to help you stay safe and secure. So that's why this sounds easy on paper and harder in real life, is because it depends on who you've got at the other end and whether they're invested in the same thing as you are.
Is it not meant to be unconditional? Like, you know, they say unconditional love, like you're meant to love your partner anyway.
Yeah, but not if they're behaving badly. It's not unconditional, is it? Then we're bordering into what we all don't like, you know, and we rightfully so. There is condition. The conditions are that we treat each other in a way where safety and security is paramount. Now, this is a decision, by the way. I never want it to be that I'm telling people what to do because people can do whatever they like, right? It's just the way I've been educated and the way I understand works, because we're all looking for things that work, particularly around relationship. This model that I use, and my mentor is Dr. Stan Tatkin, who wrote the book Wired for Love. Wired for Love is a book worth investing in for anybody who's listening to this podcast or anything to do with Dr. Stan Tatkin, because all he really represents and what our model stands for is what we call secure functioning. Most relationships are functioning insecurely. And to function securely is something that takes upper brain resource. We can't just stay on automatic. The lower brain stays on automatic. And the upper brain is a decision to be with someone where we protect each other from the outside. It's us two in, you know, the term we use in the foxhole, which is an American term, the foxhole together. And we protect each other from anything inside, be it parents, children, addiction, the gym, our jobs, our religion. So many things that compete with relationships. One of them being our need to be right. Our need to be right will compete with relationships, usually why people fall.
So if you put aside the need to be right, you draw a line in the sand and you say, nope, that's okay. I'm going to turn off my ego and I'm going to not need to be right. And I'm just going to say, sure, honey, you're absolutely right. Is that going to solve the relationship problems for the world?
Probably not. Probably not. But there's a difference between saying to your partner, I'm going to let go of the need to be right. Although I think I am, because this fight with you is not worth it because you're too important.
Okay, I want to play that out. So you're having a disagreement about, let's be honest, it could be where someone put the TV remote. You put it there. No, you didn't. Yes, you did. No, you didn't. Okay, honey, I'm going to give you this one. Is that kind of what you mean?
Yep. It doesn't really matter. At the end of the day, You know, it doesn't matter where the remote went or who put what where, because it's going to, if you do that over time and there's lots of continual fights around being right, it will erode the integrity of the relationship. And that's not worth it.
So note to self, don't argue about the TV remote.
No. Or note to self, keep things safe when you are arguing. You can argue and you can fight, but a constant reminder to your partner, you know, I love you, I want to be with you forever. There is always a tomorrow for us. Because usually in a fight, that's what comes up. Is there a tomorrow? Are you going to leave? You know, that's the kind of stuff that causes people to fight more. Though if you can fight where you're saying, remember, I love you and I'm not leaving you and there's a tomorrow and I'll still wake up and make that cup of coffee like I do for you every day, that reduces threat. And
absolutely,
reducing threat is the key.
That sounds wonderful. It sounds wonderful. I just don't know how does one go, something that's bugging you to, but honey, take it. I love you.
Well, you have to move into thinking in that two-person system, and that's usually what's problematic for people. It's around making a decision that it's a two-person system, that what's good for me is also good for you. We together and for a relationship that we want to have thrive, and for it to thrive, we take care of each other. We fix errors immediately. We repair. We don't let things hang around for days. And those things are agreement. And most people go into relationship with assumptions, not agreement, around how it's going to be. And the problem is when we're assuming differently and there are no agreement, you know, you will get into trouble. We go into agreements with everything we do. We even when we get a car fixed, is some kind of agreement, you know, around how it's going to be to make sure everybody's safe. But we can go into marriage with no agreements at all and hope that love will see us through. It just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, I'd certainly like what you're saying. So what's the biggest problem in relationships these days, in your opinion?
Well, I think people operating too much in the one-person system. It's sort of like society says, you know, you need to be stoic and not rely on others too much and solve your problems internally. Don't bother others. Don't rely on others, you know. And I think society tends to encourage and support that, right? That's not good for a relationship, because then we start to operate in what we call a one-person system, you know? And the fact that we're born already fairly innately selfish, right, makes it hard to then go into relationship if you've been molded that way, where you might have been a child that was left alone, you might have been the kid that, you know, were no noise, played by themselves, an easy kind of kid. Well, that kid, if that continues, is going to learn what a one-person system is.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's the two-person system thinking that is the problem with relationships. And I'm going to go so far as to say a society problem, because when you do get into a partnership with someone, you know, when you decide, I don't want to be on my own, where you can do whatever you want, then really on your own, you can do what you want. But when you bring somebody else in, I think that there is a responsibility to that on your behavior and how you treat them, because this stuff's a big deal. A relationship's a big deal. Mm-hmm. And I think that maybe, you know, we take that too lightly. I think that would be one of the biggest problems.
Yeah. A coherent union in your relationship. I kind of like that it's like this unity piece rather than a my relationship, my problems, you know, my life.
Which is what we're programmed to do, because we won't survive unless we think about me, we won't make it. And so, you know, that's normal. But being in relationship, it's meant to be easy, but it's really not. It's one of the hardest things in the world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think especially, I mean, you learn so many things from your own family growing up that you tend to just take as gospel, don't you? And then, but that's how relationships are, aren't they? Because that's what I've seen. So how do you break that, in your opinion?
I think as a couple, getting to know each other's histories is really important, because you need to know where your partner has come from, because of that very reason, that recognizing both your differences and also learning the vulnerability of your partner. If your partner has grown up in a family where they might have felt rejected or abandoned, you know, you would be wise to be a partner that doesn't reject or abandon.
Yes.
And that's why you need to know those vulnerabilities in each other, because they will come up.
Yeah, which makes me think of triggers. You know, like your relationship, it seems to me, in my experience, that your partner knows how to push triggers better than anyone in this world. Why is that?
Exactly. And that's because we normally choose somebody where we like to lay at their feet. This is my baggage. Help heal me.
I like this.
Right? It's very unconscious. And if we navigate the relationship without that kind of awareness, that I want you to be the first person that really doesn't abandon me, reject me, or leave me, right? You want to know what you're getting yourself into, you know, because that will create problems.
It's so complex when you think about it, because we aren't conscious of a lot of the things we bring to the table. Like, we often go into relationships, as you said, we're unconscious saying, heal me, but we don't know we're doing it. We just think we're happy and, you know, like this person because they've got,
This is why.
So in your opinion, would the divorce rate drop dramatically if we just did our kind of connection piece a lot more?
Or thought in two-person system more. What's good for me is good for you. Yep. Do anything unless I consider the impact on you. You are my person and I brought you into my life or my world, and I have a responsibility to that. If you have a vulnerability around money, I'm not going to go out tomorrow and buy the most expensive car out and tell you.
Yes. Wow, that would just heal the world, wouldn't it, if we could all interact the same way with each other, not just our relationships. That sounds fabulous.
Exactly. And human nature is, so we have to look out for ourselves. So we're actually trying to do something that at some level goes against nature, although it's our greatest desire is to pair bond and be with someone. We are more primed for more than love.
And is that
protect ourselves?
To protect ourselves, yeah, because, you know, some of the things you've said make me think, oh, gosh, that could be quite uncomfortable, having to be like, you know, looking that deep in. I mean, I'm all for looking in. I'm all about that. I want to get better every day, and I train and study and, you know, look at the hard bits and the owie bits, but doing it with your partner, that's even harder.
Yeah, but who else? Hey. This is the thing, you know, we kind of go to see a therapist and can do all that with a therapist, someone we don't know, whereas our partner, we don't do that with. And I could go so far as to say your partner can be a better therapist for you than you sitting in therapy for however many years.
That's a moment. I would love to know what you're most passionate about at the moment. Is there an aspect of relationships or something that you're working on, whether it's programs, services, a book, or just a theme?
At the moment, would probably be around this concept of two-person system, what I've probably been talking a lot about today, and actually how hard that actually is, but how necessary it is for relationships to survive. You know, most people say this kind of things like you've said today, It all sounds good on paper, you know. How do we even do that? And I think the cognitive thinking of we do it because it's good. It's just good to operate in a way that we have a collaboration where it's fair with our partner. You know, that as human beings, we like things to be just and fair. Just and fairness is a big theme for a lot of us. And you know when it tips the scales, when it becomes unequal, that's when relationships start to really run into trouble. So I think for me, because I do kind of grab onto things now and then, and for the moment, it's about this, just how much our programming is just so look after me, I'm number one, society supports it. Whereas for relationships to work, we have to be able to move between the two. You know, you can take care of you, but I must take care of you as well. Because if you're not taken care of, neither am I. Because then things don't work. You've only got to have one person in a relationship whose mental health is declining because of the relationship for things to go wrong. Because we know when we're having mental health issues, that's when things come up. Addiction, spending too much money, drugs, infidelity, all of that kind of stuff, you know. So investing in the relationship, especially if you've chosen to marry someone and you want to be with them for the rest of your life, tips. This is not just, this is what you should do. This really is a decision to get things right and to get things orderly so that you're ready.
Yeah, I love all of this. I think you've given a lot of food for thought for me, and I'm sure for all the listeners. I thank you so much for sharing. Just before you go, though, I'm just going to ask you a quick fire round. So what is your favourite book?
I really do find that I'm recommending the book Wired for Love a lot. It's really an amazing book. It has information about attachment styles, the couple bubble, which is a concept to use that reinforces some of the stuff that I'm talking about. It teaches about co-regulating, because we all get dysregulated in our emotions, and how much our partner can actually help with that. So that's a book that I'm you know, always recommending to people. And the one that I'm reading of Stan's at the moment is called In Each Other's Care. And that has 13 different scenarios around what couples can get into trouble about. Mm-hmm. Domestics, children, family, all of that kind of stuff. And that book is called In Each Other's Care.
Thank you.
He has created the Pact Institute. And he has a program where he invites therapists who want to be certified in his work. And I think there's only about 20 therapists in the world. And I went through the whole program, and I've been certified in his work. So he's really worth looking into. He has a great TED talk as well that is called Relationships Are Hard, But Why?
Fantastic.
And it only goes for 10 minutes, and it's really worth watching.
Good. Thank you so much. What are you trying to unlearn?
It's a good question. It's a personal one. And it goes along the lines of this in my own relationship of maintaining that two-person system where I can fall back into, but I want to do what I want to do. And being in relationship and consulting with my partner about things that I want to do that will affect us. You know, that is an unlearning process, because it's taken till my ripe old age now to really get this concept, because it's not an easy one. But boy, oh boy, does it bring great rewards when you get there. So my unlearning would be how to operate just, you know, myself and selfishly at times.
Thank you so much for sharing and being so transparent with us, because you could have pretended to be this expert that never has any issues and, you know, walks around with a shiny, perfect relationship. But even you obviously have stuff that happens and, you know, you're human. So thank you for showing us that.
We both have children. You know, there's all kinds of things that come up, you know, and that stuff's hard when you're meeting each other's children and trying to create a relationship and a family and all of that. You know, there's sure going to be some bombs go off in me and they do. And it's the secure functioning principles that really do help manage. And for anyone that is blending families, I think that the secure functioning thinking is almost, I'm going to go so far as to say, the only way through it, because it has to be the hardest thing in the world, or one of anyway.
Yeah, and it's a growing number, isn't it? So thank you. That's really relevant. The best advice about happiness that you've ever been told or read, it could be about relationship happiness or just general happiness.
I think we can't always be happy. I don't think, like, human nature is that we are probably mostly not happy, really, you know. I think amongst the happiness is moments, but I think happiness points a little bit more to peace.
Mm-hmm.
I think really being happy comes in moments. And I know when you think about what really makes me happy is when you have a life that's peaceful, when you do have a life that most people in your family are doing okay, you know, which is rare. You know, there's often someone not doing so okay. So I love the idea of happiness, but I prefer to use the word peace, because that makes me happy.
Yeah.
And I guess whatever that means for anybody else, you know, is probably the only thing I have to say about, because I could probably say a lot, because I think the human condition is not full of happiness, really. It's hard.
Oh, I feel like that's like podcast number two for us, that one.
Wonderful. I'd love to come back and do another podcast, because I know there's so many questions.
There are.
And I really enjoy answering them. And that is because I always do hope to bring a different kind of thinking and never just be a therapist or a psychotherapist that just offers tips, because I think the complexity of relationship just goes so deep that tips really aren't for everybody. But I think these nuances of really thinking about what you're doing and who you're bringing into your life is what's most important, because I think we have a responsibility to that.
Absolutely. And final question, if you could wave your fairy wand, what would you change about the world?
I mean, that we did treat each other better, that we did actually consider impact on others, and just how much we are really connected in some way. And I think we can often push the badness onto other people. You know, why are others behaving that way, when really we probably need to look at ourselves on where are we contributing to some behaviours by thinking too much in one person's system rather than more of a collective, that we're all connected in some way. And that how we behave is important. And again, there's a responsibility in that as well.
Wonderful. You've said a lot of things today that I absolutely 100% resonate with. So thank you so much. I know why I found you and asked you to come on this show, because I think you're perfect for us.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Wonderful. It's been a pleasure. And thank you.
Wow, that was amazing. Definitely food for thought. Thanks to Melissa for joining us. So the takeaways. Connection, Melissa sheds light on the inevitable shift from the honeymoon phase to the reality of everyday life, emphasizing how the initial chemical cocktail of bonding hormones, neurotransmitters that create a euphoric bond, naturally wane over time. And this results in less attention, less affection, and less awareness of our partner. She highlights the importance of paying attention and presence, encouraging couples to dedicate at least 5 to 10 minutes each day to focusing on just each other. Yes, put that phone down. Look at each other. Safety. Central to Melissa's approach is the concept of secure functioning in relationships. By prioritizing mutual safety, security, and collaboration, couples can create a strong foundation. And this entails setting aside egoic-driven behaviors and focusing on the collective well-being of the relationship. A two-person system. Melissa discusses the importance of moving from a one-person system to a two-person system, so there is less focus on just what's in your mind to also what your partner feels, thinks, wants, and needs. This understanding of both parties creates understanding and mutual compassion, thus achieving long-lasting happiness and unity in your relationship. Thank you all for joining us today. I know that if we could all fix our relationships at home and make them thrive, the world would be a much better place. So here's lots of love to you. And remember, you are loved and you are worthy. Have a great day.